You're listening to an original Kimco podcast on blog.kimcorealty.com.
Hello and welcome to a Kimco Realty podcast on the Kimco blog. This is Will Teichman, Director of Sustainability for Kimco. And with me today, I have Niels Cook, who is Associate Professor of Finance and Real Estate at Maastricht University in the Netherlands, as well as a visiting scholar at the Goldman School of Public Policy at UC Berkeley. Niels Cook is known very widely within the industry for his research in energy efficiency and sustainability in commercial real estate. And he's also the co-founder of the Global Real Estate Sustainability Benchmark, which is an investor survey soliciting information about sustainable governance and social practices of large real estate companies globally. Niels, welcome to the Kimco podcast.
Thank you, Will.
Niels, I'd like to start by just asking you a question. You know, we first became aware of your work through the Global Real Estate Sustainability Benchmark. It's, as I said, an investor-driven disclosure effort focused on sustainability. Could you tell us a little bit more about your role in starting GRESB and the purpose of the organization?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And before I do that, I think it's good to take a little step back. In 2007, we started research on energy efficiency and sustainability and really the financial implications in the commercial real estate market. And I did that research with collaborators here at UC Berkeley and also at Maastricht University. And what we found is that there was a relation between environmental factors on the one hand and market indicators like rents, prices, and valuations on the other hand. And if you believe that, and if investors believe that, it's important to take those factors into account when making investments or investment decisions in real estate. So when we pitched this information and presented this information to some pension funds in 2008, they immediately thought about opportunities to include this information when doing due diligence on REIT investments, when doing due diligence on investments in private funds, but also to use it for engagement purposes. And that's really how GRESB was born. At that time, in 2008, there were asset level initiatives, for example, LEED and Energy Star in the U.S. And other comparable metrics in Europe and Asia, Australia, but there was nothing really at the portfolio level. So there were some rating agencies looking at ESG issues in real estate, looking at REIT specifically, but really more focusing on child labor and nuclear energy, which is, you know, important, but not necessarily for real estate in the U.S. So we set up a portfolio level benchmark, sustainability benchmark, to measure the performance, the efforts, and the performance of REITs and their private counterparts. And it was 2008, and that was really the first year we went out to the market on behalf of these pension funds. There were APG Asset Management, which is among the world's largest pension funds, also a large investor in the U.S. and in U.S. real estate. PGGM Investments, which is also a big pension fund from the Netherlands, and USS, which is the teachers fund in the U.K. So on behalf of these investors, we went out to the market, to the REITs that they invested in, to the private fund managers that they work with, and we asked questions. We had a kind of a structured survey, asked questions about sustainability issues, and that includes obviously energy efficiency, but also broader themes, and we'll get back to that, like stakeholder engagement. So how do you deal with your tenants, with the occupants, and with the community around the properties that you own and manage? And it was very successful. We got about 200 responses on that survey, and it's really more of a data collection tool rather than a straightforward survey. We used the data to score and then to benchmark REITs and private funds. It was so successful that GRESB basically grew out into a platform that is now used by 45 investors, becoming the standard when it comes to sustainability performance and benchmarking in the commercial real estate sector.
So Niels, you deal pretty directly with a lot of these large institutional investors. You mentioned three of them by name.
Yep.
Could you give us a little bit more insight into what they're doing with this information. I mean, we're at Kimco, we're on the receiving end of a lot of these investor surveys. We fill them out. We provide the information.
Yep.
You know, I think we're very curious, and also probably some of our listeners are curious. What are they doing with the information? Is it changing their investment decisions? Could you tell us a little bit more?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think what's very important to realize is that this is not about SRI, as it's often called, socially responsible investment. So kind of mission-driven investors, the Catholic Church or labor funds, those might have very particular views on how they want to allocate and invest their money. A typical pension fund is mostly concerned, or maybe solely concerned, about optimizing risk and return. So within a given risk bandwidth, optimizing the returns. And that's important to realize, because the investors that use the information are mainstream institutional investors. I mentioned APG, which has about 300 billion euro in assets under management, but for example, also a Townsend Group that invests 110 billion in real estate on behalf of 90 institutional clients. So these are mainstream institutional investors that see risks and opportunities when it comes to sustainability in real estate. So that's important to realize. It's both about risk and it's about opportunities. And risk is there in that if an investment manager or a REIT property company does not include or integrate issues related to energy efficiency into its management and acquisition disposition of properties, that might lead to lower returns or might lead to faster depreciation of the property. So when pension funds look at the data that we collect, they do not necessarily screen out. So they don't say, well, we don't want to invest with the lower ranking companies, but they merely use the information to engage with their holdings. So pension funds typically have a longer horizon, and longer in terms of three to 5 years, and really investing for the next and future generations. And when they invest and when they have a stake, both in the due diligence phase and in the engagement stage, they use the information to have conversations with their investments. So at this point, we don't see exclusion based on sustainability performance, but we do see an increased level of engagement. Maybe to add some juice to that, there are investors out there. Really investors with a socially responsible investment mission that would not invest if a company, for example, does not fill out the survey or does not disclose. So in their search, they have that as a requirement, and we've seen that. So that's really about, do you disclose or not, but not really about how do you perform. That comes in later stages.
So you talked about risk and opportunities. I think that's very interesting. Maybe perhaps for the benefit of listeners who aren't familiar with the questions that are contained within the survey, could you give us an example of a type of a question that you ask in the survey that would give an investor an indication of whether a company is, for example, pursuing the types of energy efficiency or operational strategies that might mitigate a risk or conversely create a business opportunity?
Right. Well, so the question, the questionnaire has 42 individual questions. So they focus within others on energy, and within energy, you could think about a question like, have you, as a landlord, done energy efficiency audits or assessments of your properties over the last 3 years? And if yes, what are the outcomes? And have you taken measures to improve the energy efficiency of your properties? And if yes, what kind of measures are included? Is it just about lighting? Is it about retro commissioning of HVAC systems? Have you really looked at the envelope of a property? So that's really on kind of assessing the energy efficiency performance of properties, and then the next step, how did you improve that? We also look at data collection. So do you collect data on, for example, energy, but also water, waste, recycling? And interestingly, that question in and of itself is a very revealing question. So within the area where you as a landlord have control, do you actually know how much you consume? And often, and if you think about retail real estate, landlord control is limited. So do you work with your tenants to understand how they perform, and do you talk with them about their performance and then help them to improve?
Niels, would you say that companies who do collect data, that says something about them beyond the fact that they're just able or they have some mechanisms in place to collect information? I mean, are there broader inferences that investors make about a company and its management based on the fact that they have taken some initial steps or put some initial systems or programs in place to start to collect and track that information?
Right. I think this is a very good point. When you invest in real estate, whether it's directly in real estate and most pension funds and other institutional investors like endowments and insurance companies, they mostly invest indirectly in real estate. So you work with a REIT, with a management team, or you work with a private fund manager. The level of disclosure, the level of transparency is there, but it's relatively limited. So information about activities in the sustainability space are very informative to investors to better understand the management quality of a company. So what we hear a lot is that sustainability can also be seen as a proxy for management quality. And in some property types, like, for example, industrial warehouses or multifamily, but also retail, especially when you think about strip malls, it's more difficult to really, as a landlord, do something because the level of operational control is limited. So the early steps of putting systems in place and having active tenant engagement, that's then valued by investors. And interestingly, by making comparisons between, let's say, a Kimco and another retail REIT, or maybe a retail fund on the private side, even if it's difficult to implement sustainability initiatives, you can see the differences, and those differences are a very good indication of management quality.
Very interesting. Well, we know that GRESB isn't your day job, so why don't you tell us a little bit more about your full-time role as a professor and researcher, both in the United States and overseas?
Yeah. Well, honestly, obliges me here to say that I do spend a lot of time on GRESB with the growth really over the last couple of years, and we do have a team of 8 people. But still, there's a lot of information that comes in, a lot of questions that come in. I also think a lot of education to be done, both among investors and also among property companies. Now, besides that, or maybe in what I should be doing full time, I do academic research on energy efficiency in commercial real estate. And one example is a paper that's called Economics of Green Building, where we looked at the financial implications of Energy Star and LEED certification for commercial offices. And that was, I think, laid the foundation for more work in that space. I'm also interested in the role of regulation, for example, mandatory disclosure in the U.S. and how that might affect value of buildings, but also the performance of these buildings. And I really think in the next stage, what the role of technology can be for the performance of commercial and residential real estate. So thinking about automated building optimization, building engineer versus IT systems, providing real-time feedback to tenants, to occupants, and the role that may have in influencing their behavior. So that's what I spent my time on when I think about research, and actually starting to do more and more work on the retail side as well.
Great. Well, I noticed that some of your recent publications, and the Economics of Green Buildings is one of them, has suggested that sustainably built and managed real estate assets tend to perform better, whether that is translated into, you know, premium rents that they can achieve or higher overall asset values. Could you briefly summarize your findings on the topic and perhaps discuss a little bit more about what types of buildings and what classes of real estate that research focused on?
Right. So what we do is we compare, and then in a statistically sound manner the performance of buildings measured in rents, occupancy rates, and transaction prices. And we look first and foremost at commercial offices, and then we start to look at residential real estate. And what we find is that, and again, you mentioned it already, it might be premiums or discount, but that there's a difference in rents on average in the U.S. of about 3%. And there's a difference in effective rent, so that takes occupancy rates into account, of about 7% between green or efficient buildings on the one hand and non-green, non-efficient buildings on the other hand. And importantly, that controls for the fact that greener buildings might be newer, might be more centrally located, might be Class A versus the rest Class B. So using our statistical methods, we're able to very precisely control for that. When we look at transaction prices, we find that there's a real significant difference in prices of about 15% between green efficient on the one hand and inefficient on the other hand. So that has been quite consistent over the years. So we did that in 2007, we did it in 2010, we're looking at a follow-up study this year. And throughout the crisis, where you would expect that green buildings would suffer more, if green were to be a luxury good, we actually found that these value differences held up fairly consistently and fairly robustly. And that really indicates that part of this is really driven by the intrinsic value that energy efficiency and the broader sustainability bring to a building. So, you know, a lower energy bill ultimately should translate into a higher effective rent, so higher occupancy rates and higher net rents paid by the tenants.
Now, okay. Well, Niels, we both recently attended Nareit's Lead in the Light Forum, which is a gathering of sustainability professionals from large real estate investment trusts. And at that forum, there was an in-depth discussion about the fact that many of the efforts to quantify the financial benefits of green buildings have focused on a specific subset of sectors. Yep. And office is one of the sectors that is mentioned quite frequently.
Yep.
You're very familiar with the research, having done a lot of this original research. In your opinion, why has retail been excluded from the literature to date?
Yep. No, I think that's a very important question, and also an important gap in what we know. And if you think about the metrics that are relevant for retail, whether it's high street, whether it's enclosed shopping malls, whether it's strip malls, it is about occupancy and rent. But it's also, if you think about, you know, what's important to the retailers, the number of visitors, the turnover at stores. Well, some other metrics basically that you look at in retail, how consumers perceive the retail store or the mall. And at this point, there's no common platform to measure some of these outputs. And certainly there's not widespread input of metrics to actually measure the energy efficiency or the sustainability of retail real estate. So LEED, Energy Star are not as widespread for retail. And LEED there's some LEED certified stores under a LEED volume program, but that's it. And Energy Star is very difficult because you really need to include the tenant consumption there. So on the one hand, there's no real tools or metrics to measure how shopping centers or how strip malls might differ when it comes to sustainability. And on the other hand, there's no real common denominator or common platform to measure the performance of these properties. And certainly there's no easy source of obtaining that data. And that's, of course, you know, as an academic, what you're looking for is basically a platform where you can get data on rents and prices and occupancy rates and number of visitors. And I believe also going forward that this is very important for the industry to collaborate upon. And collaboration is, you know, that's really necessary, because Kimco could do a study of its own, but that's just going to be much more powerful if that's jointly done by some of the larger retail owners in the U.S.
So let's assume for the moment that some of those measurement and other challenges that you have identified could be overcome. You're a social scientist, and so I assume you're comfortable coming up with hypotheses.
Yep.
Could you hypothesize a little bit about what some of the benefits of green retail buildings might be? For example, you mentioned that retail is a little bit different in terms of some of the metrics that we might measure, such as the focus of retailers on foot traffic within their stores.
Yep.
Could you hypothesize on what some of those benefits might be for retail, and whether those would be, you know, the similar types of benefits to office buildings, or perhaps additional benefits, or perhaps a different set of benefits?
Yeah, I think there's certainly benefits that are common to office, retail, and other property types, and that comes down to operational cost savings, right? So for retailers, if you look at their direct energy consumption, most of that actually comes from the stores that they operate in. So they buy in their clothing, or they buy the computers that they sell, they buy them, so it's not direct energy consumption. Most of the direct energy consumption in stores, and most of that, again, from lighting, and not so much from appliances. So if you think about what drives value in commercial office, it's really, you know, mostly energy efficiency. And then there's side benefits, which in office are, for example, better productivity through natural lighting, et cetera, et cetera. That holds to some extent for retail, but with green retail real estate, or more sustainable retail real estate, I really think about attracting consumers, customers that find that place, that shop, that mall, a pleasant place to be in. And that's, you know, not just related to operational performance. You don't really feel as a you know, if you go shopping, that a store is energy efficient. You rather not want to feel it, or you don't want to feel hot, or you don't want to feel cold. So you really, you know, fine if it's energy efficient, but you really want to, you know, you want to shop in a pleasant place. And that is related to, for example, natural light. And there have been many experiments, for example, by one of the largest retailers in the U.S. on skylights and what that does to shoppers' behavior. So we do know from a lot of marketing research that shoppers are sensitive to, you know, to the outlay of a store, but also to the amount of natural light. I'm convinced that increasingly shoppers will be attracted to places that you know, that also can show that they're good citizens, basically, in the community. So if you can think on the one hand about recycling, and about what do you do with the parking lots, what do you do with some of the vegetation and some of the plants, et cetera, out there. But also if you think about solar and basically how's the shopping center used for renewable energy generation. With retail, you can also put a little broader and think about community engagement. So how is the shopping center part of the social fabric, of the urban fabric in the community? Typically, shopping centers are fairly large, so they have, you know, they have impact on the community, and they can be used for fundraisers. They can be used as starting points for runs, etc. So I do believe that retail is quite well positioned from a sustainability perspective to do more than just achieve operational cost savings. And I also believe that that's going to play out in ultimately in the metrics, and the metrics are at turnover in stores and foot traffic, and that will ultimately, so it's a couple of different links, lead to the retailers being satisfied and leasing more space, renewing their leases at a rent that you as a landlord want to achieve.
Great. I want to shift gears and then we'll wrap up. The last question that I really wanted to ask you before we wrap up is around building benchmarking. And you mentioned this earlier in your comments. You know, over the last 5 years, a number of states and municipalities have passed whole building energy benchmarking and disclosure laws. And if I'm correct, I believe Boston actually passed a law yesterday, which is the latest city in the United States to join this group of cities. I speak to many owners who don't understand where all of this data collection is headed. And since you're in the business of data collection and in the business of analyzing that information, I wonder if you could provide some perspective on how these laws compare to what the Australians and the Europeans have enacted, and really, where is all of this data collection headed?
Yeah, no, I think that is a really important question. And Europe, Australia have experienced and have seen mandatory disclosure for a couple of years now. I have to say, not always without struggle, certainly not in Europe, as things go in Europe. Australia has been more successful, I think, from that perspective. The purpose of benchmarking and of mandatory disclosure is really to establish a common platform, a common denominator for whole building energy consumption. And importantly, in Australia and the US, is it based on real energy consumption? In Europe, it's very often based on intrinsic, so how could the building perform? So it's basically like a mile per gallon, rather than a real consumption. And we know those might differ. So first and foremost, governments want to establish this common platform. Now, once it's there, and what has happened in Australia and in Europe, that might be included, that information, in leasing and sales transactions. In Australia, there's beautiful examples of pictures where you basically see that there's space for lease, and then it also mentions the energy performance of the building. So it's really right there when you have to, when you basically try to lease up space. In Europe, it's also there when you want to transact commercial space. Now, the third step is that these forms of disclosure are linked to regulation more explicitly. Regulation as a stick and also regulation as a carrot. So there's incentives that are tied in Europe if you improve your energy performance as measured by the energy label. And that label goes from A to G. So if you go from G, let's say, to E, so you make two label steps, you can get a certain amount from the utility or from the government in terms of incentives. That's kind of the carrot part. Now, the stick part is present in the UK, where F and G label properties, so those are the least efficient properties, can no longer be leased out as of 2018. So that's where, you know, regulation is really directly tied into disclosure. I don't see the US going there, you know, in the next couple of years. I also don't think that's you know, per definition necessary to, you know, to make it unlawful to lease out inefficient space. I think the market can, you know, can do that themselves, you know, because that space should be less attractive to be in, and tenants want to pay a lower rent, et cetera, et cetera. But you can kind of see where mandatory disclosure is going to. So, you know, in all of that, it's important to have a simple but effective system. And Energy Star has been that for most property types, if not all, and I think those those wrinkles should be ironed out. But you know, the examples that some cities have set, I think that's at some point going to be copied at the federal level. It not only includes buildings larger than 50,000 square foot that will be lowered over time. Other property types might be included, and ultimately it will be linked more directly to regulation. So I think that's where the world is going, and that world includes the U.S.
Very insightful. Thank you very much. And I guess our last question in closing is, what's one factor that retail property owners should be considering when it comes to sustainability?
Right. Well, I think, and I'm convinced that within retail, where as a landlord you have less control over your tenants, stakeholder engagement is key. And we discussed this earlier in this conversation. Stakeholder engagement, of course, includes what you do in the community. It includes what you do with your suppliers. It includes what you do with your employees. But it also includes, and that's very important, what you do with your tenants. And we both know that it's not easy to convince a large retailer that they should work with you on retrofitting their lighting, because they might be convinced that's going to negatively affect their sales. Or they might not be willing to share data on energy consumption, whereas you want to have that in order to benchmark the building. So tenant engagement, and that's sometimes really, it's a push and pull, is very important. The landlord is able to help the tenant, and the tenant ultimately is needed in that conversation, that collaboration. So I think, more than any other property type in retail, tenant engagement is key to success.
That's a great wrap-up question. I think it sets us all off in a good direction, something that I think certainly at Kimco, you know, we're trying to work more extensively on, and it's something that probably as an industry we can do more in terms of tenant engagement. Niels Cook, I'd like to really thank you for taking the time to spend half an hour with us here on the Kimco Realty podcast. For those of you who are interested in finding out more or following more information from Niels, you can follow him on Twitter at Niels Cook, NilsKok, or you can follow and you can follow us, Kimco Realty, at Kimco Realty or at Kimco CR. Niels, thanks a lot for taking the time. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
You've just listened to an original Kimco podcast on blog.kimcorealty.com.